I'm John from Game Life Balance US, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness commences in 3, 2, 1.
You have been granted clearance by Director Phil Coulson. Stand by for SHIELD debriefing. All information to be discussed here is classified and may only be discussed among agents granted clearance by the SHIELD director.
Now it's time for your scheduled debriefing. I'm Agent Stargate Pioneer.
I'm Agent Haley.
And I'm Agent Lauren.
Welcome to Legends of SHIELD, a Marvel Comic Universe band show. This is podcast number 122, discussing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 finale episodes, number 21 and 22, titled Absolution and Ascension. This show is recorded on Wednesday, May 18th, 2016. Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a fan-based podcast on the ABC television show Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Marvel's Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage on Netflix. And the general Marvel comic universe.
Because of Shotgun Axe!
If you'd like to talk with us about Shotgun Axe, you can get a hold of us at our website, legendsofshield.com. You can call us at our voicemail, 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871. You can find us at our Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr, all at Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D. You can find us on our YouTube channel, at youtube.com/GunnaGeek, and you can find our network at GunnaGeek.com.
This time on Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're going to be talking about our Marvel Collector Core Captain America Civil War Crate giveaway. We're going to be talking about the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 3 finale. We're going to be talking about the weekly Marvel news, your feedback, and highlights from the live chat room on Geeks.live. Hey, ladies, we've got this wonderful crate. This great crate. It's a Marvel Collector Core crate, and it's all about Civil War, and we're giving it away!
Yay! Mm-hmm.
How are we doing it?
We asked our lovely listener, who among all of the mutant characters that Fox has the rights to would you like to see in Marvel's cinematic universe? You have to pick one mutant. Selecting D, all of the above, is not an acceptable answer for this competition.
Not at all. No, just choose one mutant that you would like to see join the MCU. It's a Fox Marvel crossover. We're allowed one mutant to crossover. This, of course, is no impact whatsoever to the studios. This is just our little fan moment of who we'd like to see go over. Get it to us by the 1st of June, and we will give it out on our podcast then. You can get us the information via Twitter, via Facebook. You can email me, StargatePioneer@GunnaGeek.com. Anyway, there's a permanent record that we can go back and see, and we would love to see you there. And talking about GunnaGeek.com, we are part of a geeky network. It's got 17 great shows. We're always looking for a new one. So if you've got a geeky-related podcast, you want to put it on the network, go to getageek.com/join and then fill out the application and come on in. But we do have the 17 different shows, and one of which is a show called Audibly Exquisite. And Peter and Mike do that show on the East Coast. They actually get to go to a lot of different conventions. And this past week, they snagged a couple of interviews. Get this, ladies. They interviewed Mark Waid and Neil Adams. And most importantly, they gave their takes on Civil War versus the DC Dawn of Justice. That is awesome.
I bet that was real interesting.
Yeah, you got to go check it out. It's Audibly Exquisite number 60. They are part of the Get a Geek Network. You can find it at getageek.com. And it is just an awesome show. They have been quoted in several different articles and news sites from comic books, particularly their take on Wonder Woman and the usage of Wonder Woman. They were interviewed separately, but they both had some very great, interesting things to say. And I will say to Peter and Mike, good job, gentlemen. That was some awesome work. And I can't wait to hear more from you. Ladies, We had this great 2-hour episode last night. Are you guys ready to get into it? You ready to get into it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
All right. We had 2 episodes. They're really a 2-hour block. They were 2 separate episodes, though, as far as the creative team. Episode number 1 was titled Absolution. It was directed by Billy Gerhardt, who had a total of 21 total credits. He has 6 Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, 4 Once Upon a Time episodes, 6 The Walking Dead episodes, a Jessica Jones episode, and there's only been 13, so that's pretty good if you ask me, 10 Sons of Anarchy episodes, 4 of Torchwood, and multiple camera-related credits going back to 1997. It was written by a pair which have had experience in the comic book world. Chris Dingus, he's got 1 episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., 3 episodes of Agent Carter. You might remember us talking about him earlier this year. 9 episodes of Being Human, the American version. 11 episodes of Men in Trees. I love that series. That was a great ABC series back in the day. And he has been around since 2001. And he even did 5 episodes of Ed. And Haley, why is that so important?
I don't know. Why is it?
Because Ed actually is in The Flash.
Oh, yeah. See, I never watched Ed, so I forget. Yeah, Tom Cavanaugh.
Okay. Well, you missed out. It was a great show. And then it was written also by Drew Z. Greenberg, who has a total of 12 writing credits, but he has done such shows as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Arrow, Warehouse 13, Caprica, Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Dexter, Smallville, and my personal favorite credit of his, because it's very difficult to get one of these, an episode of Firefly. And he has been around since 2001. He's also the executive producer for such shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Arrow, Warehouse 13, Dexter, and The OC. So that's the first episode. The second episode was called Ascension. It was directed by Kevin Tankeron. And Lauren, do we know who Kevin is? Do we have any clue? Has he been around before?
We got maybe just an inkling. He's done 6 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. He's done 19 episodes of Mortal Kombat Legacy and a bunch of stuff that I haven't heard of.
Oh, he's done an episode of 12 Monkeys, an episode of Arrow this year, as a matter of fact. That was a very good episode.
Episode of Supergirl.
An episode of Supergirl and 2 episodes of Flash. And he is family to the executive producers. Go figure that.
He also did Glee, the 3D concert movie, which I think I might have joked about last time, too.
And it was written by Jed Wheaton, who, amazing, guess what? Executive producer, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., go figure. But he has a lot of writing credits as well. 13 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. This is my favorite writing credit from him because it is not supposed to have any writers. It's an episode of Axeman. And for those of you that don't know what Axeman is, it's literally a bunch of loggers that go out and cut down trees.
Yeah, it's one of those reality shows that really have people writing lines for them and stuff.
Exactly. So he's a writer. So that proves my theory with that show. And I'm so glad I don't watch it anymore. But he also did, guess what? A couple of Spartacus series, War of the Damned.
And Gods of the Arena.
That's right. 16 episodes of Dollhouse he wrote for, too.
And Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog.
That's right. So, of course, a Wheaton, like Joss Wheaton. Yeah, that's sort of the Wheatons there, right? So, Haley, I was thinking about this. We got the 2 episodes, The Absolution, The Ascension. Creative teams up galore between the 2. I have no idea if they knew they were going to air the episodes back to back when they first made them or not. But when they titled them, the meaning of Absolution, where did that run into for you for the episode?
Well, it apparently was the name of where the parts and stuff came from, which I thought was odd. Because the way they were using the word in the previous episode, it did not seem like it was a place they were referring to.
Yeah, it seems like a code word.
Right. So that it was from Absolution, Montana, but also it is what Hive wants to do. He wants to give Absolution to the human race and he wants to change them into primitives. And it was also what Mac gave Daisy. That was a very emotional scene. We'll get to that later. So, Lauren, the meaning of Ascension, run that down for me a little bit.
Okay, well, first of all, they went to space. Also, it's just, you know, elevation. We have Daisy actually using her powers to take flight in a way. We have characters rising above themselves. And it's something that I really want to talk about this episode. I've been pointing out for the past half season all the religious things that they've been doing in this season.
Mm-hmm.
And it all just came to a head at the end here. And especially, you can really see it with the naming of the episodes, too.
Right. It was a very symbolic scene at the end. So why don't we just start there? Because it's a big elephant in the room. It was Lincoln and Hive in the spaceship, and they blew up.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's safe to say that there's no Sitwell action here. They're not coming back. Lincoln basically paid for all their mistakes, and Hive, he just ran out of time.
So I was like crying when Daisy was saying goodbye and stuff, and then they had that, no, he's paying for all our mistakes, and I started laughing so hard. Again, I was raised Catholic, so I'm like trained to point out religious references where I see them, but this was so blatant. I mean, first of all, there's the cross, the little necklace, which instead of, like, at first I just saw like, okay, it's an indicator of who's going to be the one to die. But now it's like, no, it's literally a Jesus metaphor. And then we get, of course, Lincoln giving up his life for Daisy, and they ascend into the heavens, and you have Lincoln kind of forgiving the devil, and just, wow. I hate to say it, but it was so heavy-handed, I started laughing really, really hard.
Yeah, and might I add, all Quinjets actually have rockets in them. You know, they just take off, just like a Falcon 9 rocket.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they all do.
For reasons.
Right. But yes, it was as soon as they took off. You know, and I actually, for a while there, I thought maybe the Zephyr was going to go and we could get the bus back. But no, it just didn't happen.
I thought so too.
They so teased me on that. They did. So we got to go 2 seasons with any plane before we get a new one. I think they did a great job of the hot potato with the necklace and the jacket. That was amazing. Sleight of hand. We were watching it the whole time, seeing where it was going to show up, because that was our indicator. We knew the necklace was in there. We knew a jacket was there, but then they all had jackets on. So it was like,
yeah, that wasn't the giveaway, but the hot potato of death with the cross, that was nice.
Mm-hmm. It was. So well done. And if you want to compare and contrast the futuristic foretelling death scenes between Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this year, the actual process of not knowing who it was and leading you through several different people, I think both shows did an amazing job of that. Now, I will disagree personally with who they decided to kill off in Arrow. I am kind of fine. I was fine with anybody in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it's like you didn't know, so you had to be at peace with everybody. At the end, that was
when Simmons was looking at vacation sites. I started to get real worried.
I know. There's her vacation sites. There was Chloe Bennett as Daisy going off the rails. There was Fitz picked it up a couple of times, actually, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Yo-Yo had it. Mac tried to give it back to her.
Yeah. Yo-Yo got mad at Mac for giving it away and
for trying to give it back to her. She's like, no, I don't want it.
Yeah, she's like, I gave it to you. You can't just give it back.
Right.
I love Yo-Yo so much. But then Lincoln got shot and I was like, oh, that's it. That's it.
Yeah. And that very last scene where the two dudes were in the ship and he's like, well, you can sway me, but it's not going to make any difference. And Hive's like, yeah, you're right. You know, I guess just accepting their fate.
I mean, the scene with those two was a really beautifully acted, beautifully shot scene of them just looking out at the earth and both just being like, you know, we tried to make it a better place in our own ways. And again, like I said in our last episode, I really like how they did Hive. He wasn't evil. He just had a completely different morality system. And you can really see that here where he's like, I was just trying to help. And this is the only way I knew how to help.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was sad.
It was.
Honestly, I was sadder about Hive than I was about Lincoln.
Right. Every inhuman has a purpose. So what was Hive's purpose?
Hive's purpose was to try to bring the world together. It's just that there are some evolutionary divergences that are dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be an evolutionary niche that at that time needs to be filled, but then circumstances make it so that it's no longer viable. You see this over and over and over again throughout Earth's history, and I'm guessing that's probably because, again, he's a very, very old Inhuman.
So would you consider the primitives an evolution or a devolution?
They are basically, I think, the same as like Cavalier King Charles Spaniels. They're a man-made thing with a lot of flaws built in. Like Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, I mean, they're adorable, but the way that they have been bred throughout the centuries, their brain gets too big for their skull, so they have horrible neurological problems. Like, you see this with a lot of purebred dogs, and that's kind of how I'm seeing this. It's a man-made thing with a lot of problems.
Okay, so they say every Inhuman has a purpose. Is that purpose, did it come from the Kree, or are they saying there's some higher power that dictates what this purpose is?
I feel like it might be a little of both. I feel like initially the Kree might have been, like, okay, with dog breeds. Again, I'm going, hi, scientist, biologist. Going back to when people were first breeding wolves into dogs, you have the sight hounds who their whole thing is hunting across flat plains. You have the scent hounds who their whole thing is tracking. You have the water dogs, the ones who go in and hunt ducks and things like that. And, you know, these are all bred things with a purpose. But I feel like the Inhumans themselves might have also rationalized this as we have a higher purpose, like a higher calling as well. So I think it really might be a little bit of both.
Hmm. They did an excellent job of intertwining the faith with the Inhumans, with everything this entire year, without being heavy-handed about it, by the way. They didn't like lecture you or anything. It was literally people trying to figure out how this all fit together throughout the entire season. I think that is an avenue on this that I think is very well done, because some shows go way full bore into faith versus science or whatever. And this show, it dealt with it, but it didn't smack you over the head.
I would argue until that last scene with Ivan Lincoln, but
symbolism was there, but it's just, it was all practical stuff. Like, they had to go up into space to disperse the Terrigen mist so it wouldn't come back on Earth and make everybody into primitives. So, okay. Now, the two of them floating there together, side by side, that was interesting. They just accepted, they could have fought, but they didn't. And it was really,
but what would be the point?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. There is no point at that moment.
Right.
I mean, you're up in space, you're about to die, might as well enjoy the view. This is what I have learned from Armageddon.
That's, what a great movie. I need to watch that again. Need to pull that out.
I love that movie. My husband hates it.
Because the science in it is so bad?
Because the science in it is bad.
Science is so terrible. It's just an entertaining movie.
Exactly.
It's one of my favorite FX movies.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. Yeah, Michelle brought up in the chat, did Daisy seal Lincoln's fate by telling him about the necklace and that someone was going to die?
She told everybody about the necklace. She told everybody about the vision. She was very upfront about that. And that was before she was swayed by Hive. So everybody knew that somebody on their team was going to die and had something to do with the necklace floating in the cabin.
It's kind of that whole Matrix thing in the first one when Neo meets the Oracle and he knocks over the vase. And she's like, don't worry about the vase. He knocks it over.
What's really going to bake your noodle later is...
Yeah, is, would you still have broken it if I hadn't warned you? And I feel like maybe it's that sort of situation.
With the cross, because he wouldn't have taken the cross if he didn't know that the cross was supposed to be there.
And again, you see in the first episode where the vision's introduced, no matter what you do to try to change one of these visions, it still happens. It's like, did you make it happen? Was it always going to happen?
Never know. I've never been in that position. I've never done a timey-wimey sort of thing. So that would be kind of cool. I'd like to see what that was all about. Daisy had an interesting reaction this episode. We talked about it at length last episode about whether her actions were because she was being swayed or because she was personally thinking about it. And I think they took an interesting twist on it in going down the addiction path heavily with her, and that she was going through withdrawal, wanted to go back, and she couldn't. Lash took it away. We also discussed that. What exactly were Lash's effects on Hive? And he made Daisy immune to the sway, and she couldn't. And she was pissed. And there's no way. I mean, Hive took a shoulder launched rocket to his body and he recovered. There's nothing that Daisy could have done that was going to do anything to him.
Yeah, but it would make her feel better.
Mm-hmm. I think it did.
If we've learned anything from this show, it's that beating the crap out of Ward makes you feel better.
Yes. Yes, it does.
We definitely got some Quake rage going there because I heard bones crippling and cracking and he was crunching down in that little ball and he just popped right back up. Ugh.
Yeah, he was just like, seriously? And then she like hit him again.
Right. What do you think about the decision for Simmons to be the only one sent in to deal with her?
I can see why they did it. Again, because on the one hand, she's the one who was like least betrayed by Daisy. And also, like on both sides, Daisy wouldn't be as closed off around the people that she betrayed, and they wouldn't be as subconsciously like around her.
Mm-hmm. Well, Simmons was still very intrepid. She was like,
she was cold.
Yes. Yes. Treating Daisy like a patient in some sort of experiment or something like that. It wasn't like they were friends at all. Now, interestingly enough, a couple scenes later, 15 minutes later, whatever, Mac just barges down to go tell her that they got Hive and to talk to her and to try to start the healing process. Do you think that was the right call for Coulson, just to let him go down there? Or do you think he should have tried to stop him?
I think so, because it's Mac.
What's Coulson going to do? Like, punch at his belt buckle?
It depends on if he's got the shotgun axe or not. And which hand he has on.
I was so glad we got the return of the shotgun axe, and it's like better than before, because he actually had time to work on it this time.
It looked bad.
Even though I will note that when he's using it, he's never actually hitting anyone with the axe end. He's always like hitting them with the butt of the rifle or something.
Yeah, he never actually used the axe about that. You're absolutely right.
I mean,
right.
Come on. Then again, I guess, you know, these are, you know, they're former coworkers, so it'd be probably hard to hit him in the face with an axe, but still.
But he has no problem shotgunning them.
Right.
But he has no problem shotgunning them.
If you go to that scene, though, you've got the, whatever, five agents battling the primitives on board the Zephyr, so you don't want to shoot because you're at high altitude. What are they, 100,000 feet or something like that? So you don't want to breach cabin pressure at that level because that's all sorts of bad stuff for astrodynamics and aerodynamics and stuff like that. Physics kind of does bad things when you get up in a lower pressure atmospherics. So you got all that, but they went into slow-mo and they're all just beating up on the primitives using physical, brutal tactics, really. And they are just in a big, huge brawl. And it wasn't just there. It was just like every fight they went into, or they were running down quarters in slow-mo or whatever. Do you think that worked for these episodes because they were so epic? Because really, between Daisy and Hive, this is 3 years in the making.
Mm-hmm. I feel like it really worked, especially when Daisy's fighting Hive and she's using her powers in combination with her fighting. That was great.
Yeah, Daisy is an incredibly talented individual, and we'll get to the end later, but it'll be interesting to see how that takes off at the beginning of next fall. At the beginning, though, the Maveth dream sequence, do you think that was out of place, or do you think that kind of set the tone for the episode that, yeah, remember, this dude was over there for like 2,000 years or something like that?
At first, I thought it was a flash forward type thing.
I did too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did not expect the dream.
I mean, it was really fitting as a guilt dream.
Mm-hmm.
It was. But what was the significance of they were all there and they're all gone now? Is that because she...
Because she felt responsible for everything that had happened to them. And in her dream, I bet it was, you know, they all died. I couldn't save them. They all died because of me, that sort of thing. Yeah, it's like survivor guilt in a dream.
So what'd you think about emo Daisy?
So that's Daisy at the end, right? Hot Topic Daisy. I mean, it's a good look for her.
Yeah. To me, it looked like she was getting back into her hacker roots.
It looked like she was wearing a wig.
Well, yeah.
Like the hair was too shiny.
Almost like her pop star hair.
That's
yes!
Right. What'd you think of her superhero takeoff?
Oh, that was
great. She can fly.
Daisy can fly.
Yeah, that made me happy. Again, ascension. She went.
That's right.
She ascended.
She ascended to the roof.
Right. I think the most important thing to take away from that particular scene is the fact that she was following through with her promise to take care of that guy's little girl. And by the way, don't forget, that was, what, 4 blocks away from the veterinary clinic where her dad is.
Yes, that made me tear up too.
Is she trying to hook her up with her dad?
Maybe.
I think she's just trying to say, I need to introduce you to this neat guy. I don't think that she's trying to hook her up. The mom or the kid?
The mom.
Okay.
The mom.
That's less creepy. Oh, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I would want to purport him dating anybody. I mean, I know I'd want to see him happy, but, you know, he can go a little overboard as we saw. So I don't know.
I want Comic Lachlan back. That'd be fun.
I can't imagine them not ever doing it. I would like to see him there. And talking about memories from past, I think that was a wonderful use of the memory machine to go through the montage. And at that point in time, I knew Hive wasn't coming back because they were going through all the moments of Grant Ward and the various different people like Will and stuff like that. But it's particularly the Grant Ward memories. It was an effective way to disable him, but it was also an effective way to say, hey, look, this is what Grant Ward's journey was. And I think it was an excellent way to do it. And I didn't see it coming at all.
Neither did I. But I mean, yeah, if you want to disorient somebody who has all these memories, yeah, just bring them all forward.
All at once.
Yes. I really, really loved how they did that with him. Just like the random memory just coming forward and him just like being in it. And Gira and Burning Man just being like, is he supposed to be doing that? And it takes him a bit to figure it out.
And he's off balance from that for like that whole episode.
Yeah. I love that it wasn't just like a simple fix.
Yeah. He's trying to think clearly. And that might have been why where he was at the end, because he was suffering from a memory concussion or whatever at the end. So wasn't as being as effective. Although he did say, get the warhead. He was thinking clearly enough to take simple steps to accomplish his evil plan. So consultant Black Adam in the chat went back to Quake and he said those news clippings at Coulson's board or whatever are the first time that she's been named Quake in the show. She has not been named Quake yet.
It's true.
Yeah, we've seen her be called Tremors, but not Quake.
That's right.
And now we have.
So, but back to Hive, there's a couple of things I want to cover there. First of all, he did a superhero landing and he was put in the stasis box. So Hive in a box.
That is not quite what I said. And
did it have something to do with the derivative of the name Richard?
Yes. And also a song from Saturday Night Live.
That's right. All right. Talking about Saturday Night Live and other things funny, we got to talk about Talbot because A, he bets on WrestleMania.
No, he says betting on WrestleMania is dumb.
Well, how would he know? He knows because he's done it. He's bet on WrestleMania. You know he would.
I don't think that's what he was saying.
Oh, he totally would. And even Dr. Batty comments on the mustache.
I love that. Like, nobody likes Talbot's mustache.
I could see with a mustache like that, you are a serious man. That was awesome. It was. No,
what he said was, I can tell by your mustache that you're a man of import and not to be trifled with.
And he comes back with beady eyes and then he's got nothing to say back to that. But
he's like, well, I guess I can't argue with that.
So he was an integral part of the team getting the launch codes, but the abort codes. Do you think he burned himself at that point in time? You think he's not going to be working in the ATCU anymore? Do you think he's retired now?
Man, I don't know. Like, on the one hand, maybe. And then on the other hand, this was like a really necessary thing to do. So you'd think people would understand. But then again,
no. Mm-mm. Would General Ross or Secretary Ross understand? No, he wouldn't.
Oh, hell no.
Talbot's out. He might be back in SHIELD. He might be SHIELD director. I don't know. We don't know. We'll find
out. Yeah, that's who is the new director?
I think it's Talbot or May.
I think it's May. I was just going to say. But then the Talbot thing came up and I'm like, you know, maybe because he's not going to be wearing the uniform anymore after douching out General Andez.
I loved Fitz in the green screen, like Gollum outfit, like the Andy Serkis motion capture.
That was awesome.
I loved it so much.
And then he grabbed the box to stand on, It's like,
box guy. It's like he's initialing me. Yeah. Ah, grab the box.
And just, you know, scientifically saying the box was more than an inch. It was more like six, but.
It was like 3 inches, but it's fine.
So the science babies, they're on their way to the Seychelles, which sounds awesome, by the way. I haven't ever been there, but I want to go.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. It looks amazing.
Oh, it's great. And Simmons did the sciencey thing with the 100 degrees, you know, turn up the furnace and then they can't see anymore. What was the professor's third year trick? What was that, Haley?
It's complicated.
I loved when I was watching, there was two Jurassic Park references here. When Simmons was hiding and you get the ugly muffin coming up next to her. And then it's just like staring next to her. It reminded me of one of the raptors in Jurassic Park. Or maybe one of the ringwraiths in the first Lord of the Rings movie. But then it freaks out and leaves. And then later on, Dr. Ratcliffe is like, clever girl. I was like, yes, more Jurassic Park references.
So we've created a little...
That has to have been intentional.
Yeah, we've created a little battle in the chat. Consultant Black Adam is all for Talbot being the new director. Meanwhile, Michelle Ely, who's been on the podcast as a guest before, said May all the way. So there's a little battle between May and Talbot going on for who's the new director. But hey, guys, we've got like, what, 4 months before we figure that out. So have fun hashing that out for 4 months. Now, Coulson, for his sake, what a great smart hand. I love that. That skin tone into a smartphone, basically. That was awesome. Be able to remote control the Quinjets and have the super strength of the hand because he was using it to beat up the primitives at the end, too. That was pretty good. And he like stopped for a second. He was like, this isn't doing anything, but he kept doing it because he needed to subdue it. But he did one of the coolest tricks in the entire series that I've seen. And it goes back to Agent Blake, right, Lauren?
Yes, yes. When he's talking to Hive, and it's when we see like full on Squidward, and it's a fake out, it's a hologram, and it's amazing. And of course, because Coulson's a gigantic dork, he has to do the help you, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And I loved it. But what I was going to point out is they're actually working on like the sort of subdermal smart
technology
readout thing. Yeah, that sort of technology right now. Mostly they're looking at it in terms of like medical applications. For diabetics tracking blood sugar usage, or right now there's one that I've seen. It's not like an implant in the skin, but it's a thing that it's like a patch that you can put over veins and make your veins visible so that you can have better IV punctures and things like that. And it's that technology is coming and I'm very excited. And to see it on the show made me happy, even if it's, you know, because of robot arm.
It's scary where we're going. Skynet is not that far away. Actual LMDs or AI, walking AIs like Vision or whatever, it's really far away.
Your phone is already your second brain. It's, you know, the future is here. It's just different than phone, what we all expected.
It's not my second brain. It's my brain. It tells me where to go. You know, it's my GPS. It brings up all my friends. You know, they pop up from time to time when they have something to say.
I think about this sometimes and it freaks me out. Chatting and texting and all that is the closest thing we might ever have to telepathy.
Yeah. Have you seen the studies that show that our constant interaction with technology has changed the way our brains work? Like, we don't retain information anymore. We learn how to process information much faster, but we don't retain information the way we used to.
I've seen a lot of people theorizing that right now we're in a really interesting, like, transitory state in terms of human evolution, because we're done physically evolving. But right now, because we are getting so much technological advancement so fast, our brain is really struggling to keep up with it. So right now we're in this really interesting kind of middle period. And in, you know, 100 years or so, who's to say how the human brain will process differently? And it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, our kids today, my kids today, they've grown up completely in a digital world. I grew up in an analog world and transitioned into the digital world. So my parents are a generation behind and they can still, what's amazing to me is they can use smart technology. My dad has an iPhone 6 Plus. He knows how to use it. And that's actually amazing to me. My sister, who's mentally handicapped, has an iPad. She knows how to use it. That is amazing to me. So that's kind of the old generation. And then there's my generation that literally grew up with the computers as they were coming on board and everything. And we're just amazed that, hey, look, all this sci-fi stuff that happened in the 80s, we're actually getting today, except for flying cars. Come on, where's my flying car?
It's probably for the best that we don't have those when you think about it, because think about how poorly everybody drives on, like, you know, 2D kind of.
They would all be remote control.
I mean, add another dimension into it and there's
right
so many potential disasters.
Yeah, but we wouldn't have to worry about deer.
And well,
oh, good point.
Yeah.
Or armadillos. We had an unfortunate encounter with a dead armadillo this weekend.
Oh.
Don't hit armadillos.
No.
Ever.
Or deer.
Not unless you have a snowplow on the front of your vehicle.
Yeah, they are horrible little tanks, and I love them, but not when they're dead or in the road.
So my kids actually grew up in a connected digital world, and they don't know anything else. They don't know analog phones, or they have no concept of what life was in the first and second part, I guess, of the 20th century. But it'll be amazing what we have for my grandkids and their kids. It's just going to be amazing what has happened, and I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing a great job prognosticating that. So take a look at the comic book movies.
And what's going to be fun is going back to it in 20 years and seeing how completely outdated it all was.
Right. That's exactly where I was going to go. The comic book shows and the movies today are depicting this wonderful technology. And then you're absolutely right. Go 20 years from now, 30 years from now, like we are with Back to the Future and with Star Trek Next Generation and stuff, and go, wow, Next Generation. They've got these computer monitors that are the size of my iPad mini, but they're like 400 times the size and with a lot less functionality than what we have today. So I can't wait for the future. Some of this stuff we're going to get wrong. Some of this stuff we're going to get way better than what we have it. So yes, when Dr. Batty creates the new AI, that Stark already did it.
Who is an actual comic character.
Right.
Yeah, it's Ada is the artificial intelligence data analyzer from Earth 712.
Mm.
So that's going to be interesting. Who do you think that the life model decoy that she's going to be housed in is going to be?
Ooh.
I think it's somebody yet to be cast. But Morena Baccarin has been working her way through the comic book universe. So
that's true.
I think she's a little bit old for that. You know, you got to get the 7 and 9 vibe going.
Timeless.
She is.
Okay. I mean, she was great in Deadpool, and I know I stopped watching Gotham, not because of her, but when she started being on the show, I caught, I don't know, 6, maybe 10 episodes while she was on, and then I stopped watching it. But yeah, she's pretty active. She was an older character in V, though. She played an older character. She's capable of doing that, but I don't think it's going to be Maria Baccarin. I think it's going to be somebody else, but yeah, who knows? Might
bring Ward back. Freak everyone out. I don't want Ward to, like, the actor to be gone. I'm not ready.
Ooh, Hayley Atwell.
Oh, my God. Can we have that?
That would be interesting. Hayley Atwell as the... But no, we can't because she's doing the Conviction show.
So?
It's on ABC, too. I mean, she can do both.
No, she can't
she's
do
got
both.
Time.
She doesn't have to be in every episode.
That's why they canceled her series. She was doing it. They let her go for the pilot for Conviction because they knew that's my conspiracy theory is that they already knew way back last fall early this winter when the first ratings were coming out on Agent Carter, they knew that the show wasn't gonna live, so they okayed her to go. And I think that
Lawrence
was the time
Fishburne, when he was on Hannibal, was doing Blackish and Hannibal.
Those
were on two different networks.
I don't see her doing it. Yeah,
Morena Baccarin was doing Gotham and Flash at the same time.
Yeah, but she was, how many episodes of Flash?
It was just voice work, but whatever.
Right.
She did both.
That's what I'm saying. She doesn't have to be on every episode as the life model decoy, just some, and it'd be great.
Yeah, and it's enough of an ensemble show that no one character has all the screen time. She could be there. It could happen.
Well, I hope we get Mockingbird back, because we're obviously not going to get Marvel's Most Wanted, so that would be nice to have around. So Mac, we talked about him. We talked about the shotgun axe. We talked about him going into Daisy's cube. But what we haven't talked about is his relationship with Yo-Yo. Are you guys liking that ship? You think it's got a future there?
Very much.
Yes. You know what we didn't talk about at all was her taking the bullet for him.
No, we haven't.
She's like, I tried to catch it. I wasn't fast enough.
It was very much like Quicksilver taking the bullets for Hawkeye.
That made me so upset. This made me more upset than Quicksilver, though.
So what have we learned?
Well, yeah, because you like her better.
In the past year with Marvel, no matter how fast you are, you can still
don't
get
hit. Don't take a bullet for somebody if you're fast.
That's right.
I also really liked, speaking just of their interplay, when they're working together on the base, and she's like making fun of how slow he is, and then finally she like just does it herself, and she's like, I'm faster than you. She calls him like Turtle Man. They're so cute.
He's very lucky he's handsome.
Yes, he's very lucky he's handsome. I want her to stay on as a regular next season. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. I love her.
I don't remember what happened to Joey. Did he just decide not to come back?
He just like left.
Okay.
He's like, yeah. Like he got really angry because it was that episode where they're accusing everyone of being traitors, and then he just left.
He wasn't cut out to be an agent, but at least he knows where he can go for some help. Hey, what'd you guys think at the beginning when Coulson finally found the abort codes and it's a whole page worth of stuff? And he's like, okay, what's the code? And he's like, all right, catch us fast.
Try to keep up.
Boom, 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 boom.
You know, it made me a little worried that it apparently takes weeks to get a kill code for a nuke. Like, you know, if we need the kill code for a nuke, we might need it kind of fast.
Yeah. Speaking of pages and stuff, when Dr. Radcliffe, like when Hive was like trying to get him to fix the thing, and he's like, this is not my specialty. So he goes and gets the manual.
Start reading it. That's what us engineers do.
I mean, yeah, I loved that because I've kind of been in that same situation where I'm Googling like how to fix autoclave. Like, this is not my job.
Also, I am so glad I wasn't one of his primitives because I would have been forced to make that thing work. No, thank you.
I couldn't tell the difference if you became a primitive.
And I'm so glad. Apparently, he's going to be sticking around next season. And I'm so glad because I love him. I love the mad scientist archetype. And I love how he's more professionally worried about what the primitives say about his abilities than he's, oh, and then he's like, oh, yeah. And I guess it's bad what happened to them, huh?
Well, yeah. Yeah. He catches himself like several different times. Like, oh, no, no. It's so bad. No, no. We can't have this. Can you undo it? No.
He's so worried about the science of it that he's like, oh, yeah. And I guess there's this like other stuff going on too. But I mean, no surprise, but I love that kind of character.
I have one final note for the episode. Where are all the Koenigs? Where did they go? I mean, there's a bunch of them. Where are, and their sister, where are they?
When did they film this? Because Patton Oswalt, and we didn't address it when it happened, but Patton Oswalt, who plays Koenig, lost his wife.
That's right.
Very recently. And she's a crime writer, Michelle McNamara, who I loved. And I'm wondering if like any involvement that he was going to have with the show might have been cut short because of that.
That could be a possibility. And of course, he's in a character that can come back next year when he gets back on his feet or whatever. Patton Oswalt right now, his voice is starring in Archer, the current season of Archer. So if you miss Patton Oswalt around, I'm assuming that was recorded sometime last year or whatever.
Oh, yeah, it was recorded. For animated shows, I know they usually record like a year in advance. Like when Clone Wars, before it was canceled, they had recorded most of the season after, which is the lost episodes that you can see on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
So they would record like a year or so ahead.
So Ruben on Facebook says, I like the show, but I'm surprised why their uniforms are not special powered like Iron Man, especially to fight against people with power. Well, that would be Deathlok, wouldn't that?
Kind of. Also, budgetary reasons. Yeah. I would
budget.
Imagine.
TV budget.
Right.
Yeah, they got to save it for the important things.
Right.
Like space.
So that's it for my notes. Haley, do you have anything else that we haven't covered already?
I think it's mostly quotes.
Okay. Lauren, do you have anything else we didn't cover for the two episodes or the season or the series for that matter?
I really, really, really want to go back and watch from the beginning just to see how we got here, especially. And at some point, I am going to have to go back and just watch through the season looking for the religious allegory.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the kind of thing I do, apparently. But yeah, no, I think this has been a fantastic season. I'm going to really miss Brett Dalton. And I suppose Luke Mitchell.
Yeah.
I never really liked Lincoln all that much as a character, but
yeah, he always seemed like he was about to die anyways.
Yeah. Like I was talking with somebody earlier this weekend. And, oh, I was talking with Scott this weekend. And I feel like the twist with him last week really only worked because I was expecting the worst from him. Like when I thought he was going to run off and join Daisy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like this is a really interesting example of a man being fridged, where it's contributing towards Daisy's emotional pain instead of a female character just dying for, you know, a man's emotional pain, as happens a lot in comics and such. And I'm really interested in seeing how exactly the guilt from all of this affects her going forward next season.
Yeah, next season will be good. Michelle in the chat, by the way, put in there a comment. While the moments were emotional, I won't miss Lincoln. I see his death as a source for Daisy's pain.
That's it, exactly. Yeah. Yes. That's
it. We'll definitely have to have Michelle back on the show again soon.
I also say, I feel like we did not get enough May in this episode.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about her. She was, like, finally giving Daisy, like, good advice, and she's about to confess, like, yeah,
like,
you know.
About to have, like, a mother-daughter moment, and then, boom, knocked out.
She got hit in the back of the head.
That's why I think she's, you know, Michelle, I clamored a quote that Michelle said on the show 2 weeks ago, and she said, May all the way. And that she was the one that was acting the most like an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that it was still true all the way through. From that reason, I could see her as director. I could actually see Fury coming back and being director. I could see Agent Hill coming back and being director. And there's just a lot of possibilities.
I'll tell you why it's not Fury. They cannot afford that much Samuel L. Jackson.
No, they can't.
Probably not, but I mean, I could see it happening, even if they recasted him or something, which I don't think they would. He's going to come back in the MCU. He's been out, but he's going to come back. He's still on contract for some movies. They just didn't exercise him for Civil War. All right, Kaylee, you got some quotes. Let's hear them.
Every time I see him, I want to punch something.
Don't we all?
Not anymore.
This isn't about super speed. This is about your turtle speed. I watch you work slow. I move faster.
Right. She did that whole thing with the memory thing. I was like, what are they doing? And then boom, boom, boom. And by the way, it looked like it was a bunch of XLR cords, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
It did.
This won't kill me. No, but it'll suck.
That was awesome.
We caught Hive. Yes.
Woo.
Yay. We finally caught him.
No, that was Batty.
I know,
like,
I know.
He's just there.
I know.
He's like, oh, yay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, everyone's just there. And then you have him like, yeah.
They were doing the superhero pose, you know, with the camera up from the ground. That was a great pose, by the way.
It's because didn't cut to black soon enough. It went like 5 seconds longer than it was supposed to.
He's like,
this is why you got to cut to black. You have to time it just right, or else you get weirdos like Professor Batty going, yeah.
Put a few tricks up my sleeve.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But Ba-dum-tsh.
If May were here, she'd give me a very dirty look. Yeah.
But she wouldn't be able to change his mind. She'd just give the dirty look.
Built this damn thing for a reason.
Love it.
Simmons, snorkeling.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be just something that'll take your breath away. Snorkeling.
Right, oh, man.
There, that was totally me. And she's like, oh, there's all these fish that are just there. Yes.
I love snorkeling and I can't really do it with my ears anymore, but I loved snorkeling in the Hawaiian Islands. Just love the oceans. Yes. At the great temperature, and it's the right depth.
When we went, we heard whales.
Oh,
it was
nice.
Amazing. And I got to see an octopus, and I was the only one who saw it, and a pufferfish, and there was all these fish swimming around, and I got like sort of okay at diving under and not like drowning on the water and the snorkel stuff, because it has a little flap that closes. And then a turtle came and started swimming at us, and we had to swim away from it because you're not allowed to touch the turtles. It was amazing.
You don't want to. They can do some nasty things to you. Yeah, even at the lake up in Wisconsin, we get snapping turtles. We're like, oh, no, get away, because they can mess you up. But I mean, they don't normally attack you, but they can. You know, it's kind of like sharks. They probably not going to attack you, but you just don't want to give them the opportunity, a chance. This was one of the better episodes. I know there were some slow spots in talking to some people as it went along, particularly in the first episode. I think it was amazing. I was riveted the entire time personally. And maybe that's because I'm invested, because we have this podcast and I've seen every single second of Marvel TV that they've had on since this whole thing started and all the movies and everything. But this was wonderfully connected within the TV show itself. It had homages to connections with the MCU, maybe not as connected as Chloe Bennett would like, but it is connected still in the same storyline. I liked it. Lauren, what do you think? It was a good episode, one of the better ones. What do you think?
There were other episodes that I liked better, but I think it was all in all a really satisfying season finale.
Yeah. Haley?
I think it wrapped up the season really well.
Yeah, I think so.
I would agree. I like it a lot. I'm not sure if it's as good as last season's finale was, but it was still good. I'm looking forward to next season to see what they're going to do. I feel like next season is going to be dealing a lot with the fallout of the Sokovia Accords and how it's affecting the TV show.
In my opinion, there's been five really memorable episodes. There was the mid-season finale for season two. There was the season finale for season two. There was the mid-season finale for season three, the season three finale, and 4,722. Those are the five ones that really stick out of my mind as the top five. And don't ask me to say which one is one and which one is five, because I don't know. But those are the five top ones in my book.
I would add in there, what was it, Turn, 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 where we got the reveal of Hydra.
Yeah, they're back in season one. I believe that season was episode 17, so it was close to the end.
Yeah, whatever. It was the episode that came out right after Captain America Winter Soldier. So,
yeah.
Yep. All right. Great stuff. We can't wait for this fall. We have plenty to cover this summer. First of all, next week, we're going to close out Jessica Jones. We're going to do the final two episodes next week. And after that, we will be going episode by episode with Daredevil. And I will line up some guests and we will do what we did last summer. And we will have guests on talking about the Daredevil season. And then after that, we will be talking some great cartoons as put in front of us, served up to us by Haley. So I can't wait for that.
Right. But before we get to Daredevil, we're going to do X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Yeah.
X-Men Apocalypse, which we were all really excited about until this past week. And now we're still excited, but not really excited. So we'll see.
I'm still excited.
Now we're only mildly excited. Even if it sucks.
Yeah. Now only mildly excited.
I mean, it has Oscar Isaac. I'm okay. Even if he's dressed up in a Power Rangers bad guy outfit.
Psylocke. Here we go into the news. This week, it was a short news week for us because we had our podcast on Sunday because of various reasons, one of which our network owner, president, and producer of Gonna Geek is making up for right now, and he's doing some phenomenal camera switching, as this has not been coordinated at all, ladies and gentlemen, but he did some great camera switching, and that will be great in post. So, we only had a few days of news, but there's been some big stories out there, and the first one that we're going to talk about is the time slot move that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was announced for next fall. Haley, what do you think about this? I've got my own opinions. What do you think?
It's the second time they've moved it later into the evening since the show started. And I, for one, would appreciate, I like a darker tone, a more adult tone in television. So I'm looking forward to it. And it would be more in keeping with the tone that we're seeing on the Netflix series, which is, you know, darker, more adult.
Lauren, what do you think?
I kind of got to agree. I think part of it is the Netflix effect, that those all came out really well. So they're like, okay, let's move a bit in this direction. But also following the fallout of this season, where I think it's going to be following a lot more of Daisy's angst and stuff like that, I think there probably is going to be room for that sort of content. And honestly, I'm really excited to see where they take it. It doesn't hurt that a lot of my other favorite shows that are on at that time slot, that content can let you get away with some interesting stuff, whether it's visually, sexually, violence-wise, just whatever. Are we going to be getting, like, side boob?
Okay, that'd be cool.
Are we going to get butts? Side boob.
Okay, wait, way to...
Tasteful side boob and butts.
Wait, way to sell it to me, Lauren. But here's my concern, that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has come...
Are the guys going to start taking their shirts off?
Without oozing wounds?
All right. Here's my concern, though. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of the entry drug into the Marvel universe. You got the wonderful films out there. You got the great comic books. But Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the mainstream television show about Marvel-related stuff that is not like deep, dark stuff that's not rated for kids. They need a live-action kid kind of show, and maybe that's the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Maybe I'm being incorrect about it, but on a weekly basis, you need something that these kids who are trying to grow up and be comic fans can actually start seeing this stuff, and they just don't have it available to them unless it's the cartoons, which they'll grow out of eventually. So I don't know. There needs to be a middle ground.
But they're going to be having the teen shows coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, like Cloak and Dagger.
Freeform.
Yeah, Cloak and Dagger.
Yeah, Cloak and Dagger, and yeah, all those that are coming up on Freeform. So this, I'm kind of looking at it the same way I look at like Harry Potter. It grows with the viewers. You start off, you know, season one or Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, whenever it's all fresh, it's all new, it's all happy. And then everything gets darker. And, you know, as you move along and the story gets denser, it kind of by necessity gets more complex and upsetting.
Okay. This is my favorite comic book show on TV, without a doubt. Netflix, whatever, mm-hmm. I would put it in front of Daredevil. Maybe that's just because we get to see a lot more of it. There's been three seasons with 20 plus episodes versus Daredevil. There's just been two seasons with 13 episodes. Daredevil is an amazing series in its own right, probably ranks high up there, but this is it for me. This is my favorite. And Haley might disagree. She might like Flash better or not. I don't know, but
I like Flash a lot.
Yeah, I do enjoy this show a lot. And I, as an adult, will be glad to see it move into some more cerebral, darker kind of tones, I guess, while still maintaining the levity of the Marvel Universe, because I don't think Clark Gregg can go all dark. As long as he's around, he will still have some comedy in him. And that's what the actors were hired for. Chloe Bennett wasn't just hired for her drama. She was hired because she
could
be fun.
She was also hired for her singing.
That's right. And we need to get a musical episode now. But
we really do.
That's my concerns. I don't think
it's gonna happen. I'm just saying, Hannibal pulled off kaleidoscope lesbian sex. So all I'm saying is that at this time slot, S.H.I.E.L.D. should be able to pull off some interesting stuff too, which should include a musical episode.
Right. I'm interested to see what they do next year at 10 o'clock versus 9 o'clock. And while I prefer the 8 o'clock time slot, you know, whatever, we'll see how this pans out. Okay. The episode ended. The articles started coming out from the production team, the creative team behind the series. They did an interview. It was on EW.com. I read through it all. And it was basically just them recapping what had happened and whatever. But Lauren, do you want to hit the highlights of it?
Yeah, the highlights are, they're like, what came with the decision to have Lincoln die? And they're just talking about why we did it. We wanted it to be painful. And I mean, yeah, okay, whatever. The final scene, we didn't talk about this, but I tried talking about it as obliquely as possible in the live tweet. The final scene with Daisy and Lincoln mirroring Captain America the First Avenger with Peggy and Cap.
Yeah.
And apparently that was not intentional. They swear it was not intentional.
And I could see that, because if it was intentional, it would be drawn out a little bit more. There would have been more music, and then there would have been a happy ending at the end.
Yeah. Talking about why they did the 6-month time jump,
which is they've done it before.
Talking a bit about Hive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And confirming that, yes, Dr. Radcliffe is going to be on it again next season. So that has me excited. If you want to see the, you know, viewpoints of why they made some of these decisions a little more, it's worth reading. If not, it's nothing we haven't really talked about this episode.
Right. And the big thing is that the director, they kind of joked about it, which was a non-answer. It's like, is Coulson really not the director? Who's the new director? And they just kind of laughed it off. So, I think they handled it well, not trying to give away information, but at the same time, it's like, come on, give us a hint.
If they wanted you to know right now, they would have said it in the episode.
Right. Moving on, talking about in the know and who's in the know in Marvel and who's not in the know. We talked about it before because I came away from C2E2 with the Chloe Bennett panel, which we still have audio from that we were going to go through later on this summer. And she basically has come out and all the news outlets picked up on it and said, Marvel doesn't care about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Now, we kind of addressed this last week in last episode by saying that the timelines involved just don't kind of match up. But I would say with the restructuring that went on with Kevin Feige taking over, I think that they are cutting Marvel TV on ABC loose from the universe a little bit. I just don't see as strong as connection there.
Yeah, at Wizard World Des Moines, Chloe Bennett, somebody asked her if she'd like to appear in the Marvel movieverse. Mm-hmm. And she said, the Marvel Cinematic Universe loves to pretend that everything's connected, but they don't acknowledge the show at all. So I would love to do that, but they don't seem too keen on the idea. So yeah, she's pretty upfront about that.
She said it before in March, though, in Chicago, and nothing happened. Yeah. She had no Marvel snipers. It was out there. It wasn't like Marvel didn't know what she said. And I could see, well, nobody told me I can't say this, so I'm going to say it again. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to gauge reaction. Yeah. You never know. It could be a plant, but I don't think so.
I'm kind of used to the whole, you know, right hand doesn't, like, ignores what the left hand is doing in terms of, I was a Star Wars Expanded Universe fan for years and years and years and years, and Lucas kind of said, well, not kind of, there was no kind of about it. Lucas said that basically doesn't exist to him. So there was all the canon wars there. So if this ends up another thing like that, I mean, I can still enjoy a thing and have it interconnected in my mind, and this is what fandom is for anyway. But stop saying it's all connected if it's not all connected. Say one way or another.
They haven't said that since season one.
They did on the official Marvel Twitter account the other day. I think it was last week. There was an It's All Connected drop.
Oh, yeah. Did they spell out hashtag and say hashtag itsallconnected.com? Did they do
Sadly,
that one?
Sadly, they did not, but I did.
Okay.
I did.
And once again,
everyone go to hashtag itsallconnected.com. Spell it out. Hashtag.
It's all connected. Yep. No spaces or anything. Com. Yep. Lots of fun stuff. So, but the connected universe gets me thinking about how DC is going to handle Supergirl and reintegration or integration into CW and in the Flareverse, and if that's going to happen or they're going to maintain separate universes, whatever. And I get that in comics that they have separate universes or whatever, but if you're going to have everything on the same channel, you might as well connect it. So I'm sure there'll be some sort of crisis or Infinite Earths or whatever event to do that, to bring at least those three shows together.
They've laid the groundwork that they could do that.
Yeah. And I can't wait for that to happen, because I think it was a big mistake for them to cut off Supergirl the way they did earlier this year with the Flash Supergirl crossover. All right. I have not read this story, but I'm very interested into it. Simon Kingsberg talks Gambit delays.
Yes. So this was announced recently. We've talked in the past about, Gambit has release date. Gambit has been put on hold, so on and so forth. So Simon Kinberg talked about why they're doing it. They have been refocusing the film by creating a fresh script and tone that more closely matches the character. So hopefully, you know, it's good. And Simon Kinberg even talked about learning lessons from Deadpool. He said that one of the things that I've learned on all these movies, and maybe the lesson was best learned for me on Deadpool, is that I'm head desking so hard here, because how could you not realize this? The most important thing is getting the tone and the voice right. The storytelling, the actual narrative, and the plots are sort of interchangeable and disposable ultimately. I mean, duh. Like, if you're going to see a superhero movie, I'm not wrong in assuming this, right? You're there to see the character being the character, and we know that the plot's usually going to be really formulaic and have elements A, B, and C. I just want to see that character having fun, right?
Yeah, that's the key. I mean, we saw it with Deadpool for sure. Deadpool was just out there. Ryan Reynolds was just having, he continues to have fun. I watched those commercials, like those Viagra commercials, and it was great. He is having the time of his life.
There's room for innovative story and all this stuff, but I don't think that in terms of superhero movies, it's really so much on the screen. I feel like in the comics is more of where it's safer to have that play out, because it's a smaller budget going into it. It's a less financial risk. And since Hollywood is as risk averse as possible, and you're probably going to make the story bland anyway, just focus on the character.
Yep. Just like they should have done Hulk. Just saying.
Yeah.
Moving on. I have a lot to say about this, but I know you guys do too. So please take the reins on it. We're talking about Iron Man 3 and the recent revelations of what happened with that film and the villain and toys, and just kind of makes me sick.
Okay. First off, let me get the exasperated sigh out of the way. Okay. Haley, you want to take this one?
Okay. So Iron Man 3's villain was supposed to be female, and they decided they shouldn't do that because they could have more marketable toys by having a male villain. And I don't know what happened because I started seeing red and I couldn't read the whole article.
Yeah. So first of all, I would like to point out that I think, if I remember right, the only Aldrich Killian toys were like a couple of Legos. Like, I Googled it to make sure
it wouldn't have been an interesting toy anyways.
Yeah. And also that there were other female characters like Brandt and Maya Hansen, you know, the female Extremis agent and Maya Hansen, who had larger roles in earlier draft, and their roles were also cut because New York called and said, that's money out of our bank.
Of course.
And yeah.
Duh.
He emphasized that the memos came from Marvel corporate, not current Marvel studio president Kevin Feige.
Well, wasn't he part of the corporate back then, too?
Well, he adds, I don't know if it was Ike Perlmutter. I don't know who it was. They never told me about who made that decision. We just got the memo one day, and it's about toy sales. That's all I know.
Yeah, go figure.
Hold on a second. I have to go flip over a table.
I know, right?
They got to do some atoning here. They have to. And I think this is part of the rationale for the Black Widow movie, but they've got to do more than that. They have to quit pushing off the Captain Marvel movie. They have to highlight more some of the great female characters in both the movies and the show. And I think the show has done a good job of that, but still, it's not enough. And I know they wanted to do Mockingbird. Mockingbird would have been their female-led show, but that didn't happen. So come on, guys, you know, do something. You can't change past decisions. You have to move ahead to do something. And they haven't done it right yet. And I want to see them do it. This is one of the few things that Marvel hasn't gotten right. And they do need to fix it. I'm not giving them a pass on it. They need to fix it. But they've done a lot of other things right. They're capable of doing it. So it's not like they're not capable of doing it. So, and I know they all want to make money. And they think that they can't make money with female-led stuff. Do it. You have to now, especially after this revelation.
Yeah. I just, every time I think about it, I get angrier.
I can't even talk about it anymore.
All right.
Refer to our earlier podcast to hear our raging.
Yeah. You've heard us rant about this before. It's the same rant every time. We should not, what was it I heard somebody say? In the year of Beyonce 2016, we should not be making the same rant again and again and again.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, Marvel, get it right. And that's it for the news. We're going to go on to some feedback. We got some great Twitter feedback these last few days. Once again, it hasn't been a full week. We've only had a few days. So thank you very much to everybody that has come and communicated with us. The first tweet that we have is from our pal Christy at Adonna Girl, and she tweeted, the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. come to Marvel Lego Avengers.
Yeah, there's a picture of May here and as a Lego, and she's amazing. And then I also saw while I was live tweeting last night, Kyle MacLachlan was like, I'm a Lego, and it's him as, you know, Mr. Hyde.
Right, that's awesome.
Well, fully hide it out, but they have him as a Lego. So he was very pleased about that. So both him and Ming-Na were posting about that yesterday. So check it out. They are adorable.
Lego figurines come in one size. So, I mean, you can make the head a little bit bigger, I guess, and maybe the hair, but you're not going to make
it's for the online game.
Right, I know. But still, all the figures in the games are the same size too that I've seen anyway. I'm not a Lego gaming aficionado. I do have some Lego games. I just haven't played them as much.
I have the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. I think I have Harry Potter. I don't have Marvel. I need the Marvel one.
I bought a bunch of Lego stuff for my nephew. My 7-year-old nephew got an Xbox, or his dad and him got an Xbox for Christmas, and I made sure that I pumped him full of tons of Lego games. And my sister is like, you need to stop. I mean, this is too much. I'm like, you don't understand. There's never,
never.
enough Lego games. So he's got it all. Moving on, Annie Mingna said, overall, I'm impressed how they managed to keep the final reveal a secret from me. And yeah, I think we talked about it before. I think it was great. I think they did a great job. I think Arrow did a great job. I mean, can't argue with that. And then Andy Mignot also kind of responded to you, Lauren, and I don't think this was during the live tweet because Andy doesn't watch the show.
No, he was watching it after.
Since you did the tweet, go ahead and read them.
So it's at the part when Daisy flips out because she's immune to the sway. So I tweeted, "Hell hath no fury like a woman denied her happy juice." To which he responded, "Was happy juice a euphemism?"
How can it not be?
I guess.
Probably wasn't the intent, the original intent, but it works later. So thank you very much for pointing that out, Andy. At Mr. Pericletes tweeted us, and he said, "Also, to be killed by an Avenger, according to Fury, and it is a memed photo, Bill Paxton is the only actor to be killed by an alien, a predator, and a Terminator." And then also Coulson.
Yes.
Who is an Avenger.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, yep, Bill Paxton, very much. I got the inkling to watch Twister. I haven't seen that in a while. I got to go watch that.
Yeah, they were showing it the other day on HBO, and I loved that movie so much when it first came out, and I haven't seen it in years.
There's a big article about the fact that it actually chronicled, I mean, it was fictional or whatever, but it actually chronicled like the first tornado measuring system that, or inspired it or something like that. I can't remember the full story, but that was pretty neat that the movie is actually connected to science in some way. It's not like Armageddon. There's real science here, people. Real science. And then lastly, at Born to Eat Bacon tweeted us and he said, "Ooh, I done been busted. It's Ginger Ninja, Ginger Ninja, Ginger Ninja, Ginger Ninja." And he just retweeted it about 20 times. So there you go. That was some awesome stuff. You guys have any interactions with fans that you've had in the past week that you want to say anything about?
Not in the past couple days. I mean,
okay. What we do can talk about is our great fan interactions at conventions. I've gone to two of them this year. It was kind of amazing. I sneaked over to see a convention after C2E2, just there for a couple hours. But it's amazing. You talk to people there and they're all, I guarantee you, you go to a convention and you're going to find somebody that thinks the way that you do. You might not run into them right away, but sometime during the time that you're there, you're going to strike a conversation. You'd be like, "Dude, we're one. We think the same thing." So it's great.
Yeah, I went to a writer's meeting this weekend. Well, it was a business meeting, but we started talking about writing stuff. And one of the things that we talked about was that's like the great thing about being friends with geeks. You bring up one thing that somebody likes and then all of a sudden it's like, "You like this thing? Let's be best friends."
That's right.
And yes, this is something that I really, really like about the whole, you know, geek thing. It's, you know, you form these bonds over just the littlest things and then it grows. And then, hey, all of a sudden you're like friends. And it's amazing.
It's why this podcast exists.
Right.
Exactly.
The three of us, I don't know if we actually met all in the same, we were in the same room, but I don't think we all talked to each other down in Texas.
Oh, I doubt it.
Yeah, at that time. But yeah, we are together on this podcast because we went to a small convention together years ago. So there you go. Great things can happen. And talking about great things that can happening at cons, Lauren, you're going somewhere relatively soon, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to a couple of some places in about a week, a little more than a week. Space City Con is going to be here in Houston, and Space City Comic Con, excuse me. I think they changed the name, but they're going to have all sorts of interesting guests, some comic guests, some media guests, and I'm going to do my best to try to get some good content for the podcast. Charlie Hunnam from Sons of Anarchy and Pacific Rim is going to be there. Alex Kingston from Doctor Who, and I will always think of her as from ER.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Eugene Simon, Lancel Lannister from Game of Thrones. And then comics-wise, there's all these people who've worked on like Marvel Comics. Sam De La Rosa, who I think actually lives here in Houston. He's worked on like Spider-Man before. Nick Bradshaw, who worked on Wolverine and the X-Men. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And then later on in June is Comic Palooza here in Houston. And we're part of that podcast partnership. And they just announced, okay, first of all, Bill Paxton, who we just talked about, going to be a guest. And today they just announced that Howard Stark himself, Dominic Cooper, is going to be a guest.
Woohoo! The one who's still alive. Yay.
Yes. The one who's still alive and currently going to be on Preacher, which is upcoming this weekend, and I am so very, very excited about.
Now, you brought up that Alex Kingston was on ER. I do remember that. She's actually one of my favorite characters because she was the wife of, what's his name, Goose from
Dr. Green.
Anthony Edwards.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Dr. Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were Alex Kingston and Ming-Na on ER at the same time?
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't believe they were.
Yes, they were. Because actually, yeah. Ming-Na's character is the one that did the pregnancy test for Alex Kingston's character.
You're right. It's been so long since I've watched ER.
And there was a really funny scene where she had Poison Ivy in places. That would be funny.
Yeah, I remember that. That was awesome.
Yes.
All right. So lots of great places that you can see Gonna Geek podcasters. We talked about at the beginning of the show that the Audibly Exquisite guys are on the East Coast a lot. We'll do a segment and run down where everybody's going to be for the next few months in the next 2 weeks, either next week or the week after. So stay tuned for that. All right. I am done. Are you gals done this week?
Yep. I am done.
All right. Let's walk this one out. Join us next week as we discuss the final two episodes. So that is the penultimate Jessica Jones season one episode and the finale season one Jessica Jones episode. Take a Bloody Number and AKA Smile. That's actually AKA Take a Bloody Number and AKA Smile. You can always find out our live streams at geeks.live. As we mentioned at the end of last podcast, we would say goodbye to Blab for hopefully just a little bit until they get a little bit more reliable, but you can always find wherever we are streaming at www.geeks.live, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central on Wednesdays. And we have a bunch of contact information. We have a website, legendsofshield.com, our voicemail, 844-THE-BUS-1, 844-843-2871, Facebook account, Twitter account, Tumblr account, all Legends of Shield. And our YouTube channel on the network where this video hopefully will be at youtube.com/GunnaGeek. And don't forget our forums. There are a few hearty people that would love to talk to you there that you can find them forums.GunnaGeek.com or search for Gunna Geek on the Tappa Talk app. The next live show at Geeks.live will be the Starling Tribune talking about the latest Arrow episode, 9 p.m. on Thursday night. I want to say a special thank you to Steven for making this broadcast possible tonight. I want to say thank you to everybody that watched us on Facebook Live. This is our first attempt at it. So if you're watching us, we didn't announce it at all. We didn't even know if it was going to be possible. So thank you very much for staying with us all the time. And thank you everybody that has made the switch from Blab over to Geeks.live to join us in the chat room. We got Michelle. We had the consultant Black Adam. We've got the Mad Hatter. We got Cajun Sean in there. And Steven even popped in from time to time as well. So I want to thank everybody for dropping by.
I want to thank everybody who leaves a comment on our Facebook page, who shows up on Twitter to drop us news, whether it's during the live tweet or just thinks about us randomly during the week. We really love hearing from you.
I'd also like to remind everyone that we have a voicemail line that you can call, and then we can hear you and we can talk directly to you and we can hear your voices, which would be cool. And you could call us at 844-THE-BUS-1. That's 844-843-2871. And you could do that to send us your entry for our cool giveaway to win the Captain America Civil War crate. And remember that the entry that we're looking for is the one mutant you would like to see brought over into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So you can send us a voicemail, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook. Those are probably the best ways.
Yep.
Don't put it in like a chat comment anywhere or something, because that will get lost and we will forget about you.
Yep. So email, Facebook, voicemail, or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. All right. I had a great time this season. I definitely had a great time tonight, ladies. Thank you for making it a very special show to watch. And with that, until next time, I'm Agent Stargate Pioneer.
I'm Agent Haley.
And I'm Agent Lauren.
See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you want to leave us feedback, go to gunnageek.com and you will find all of our contact information in other shows. You can also visit legendsofshield.com where you'll find our complete archive of podcasts. The music heard on this podcast is by Kevin McLeod and can be found at incompetech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of the individual host and do not represent Legends, Stream, or Gunna Geek. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the property of the Disney Corporation. No infringement is intended.
All right, Kaylee, you got some quotes. Let's hear them. Or maybe sneeze. God bless you.
Sorry.
iComicPalooza 2016 is almost here. iComicPalooza, there are literally thousands of hours of programming. You'll see your favorite celebrities, comic book creators, and authors. Special celebrity events at this year's comicPalooza include a cast reunion of the classic 1986 sci-fi horror favorite, Aliens, featuring Sigourney Weaver and more. Also, the cast of the Boondock Saints will be in attendance, including Sean Patrick Flannery, and of course, Walking Dead star Norman Reedus. Other celebrity guests include Underworld star Kate Beckinsale, Lenny James from The Walking Dead, wrestling superstar Ric Flair, comic book legends John Ostrander and Adam Kubert, and of course, me, Ming Chen from AMC's comic book man and podcaster extraordinaire. Be sure to follow ComicPalooza on social media, on Twitter at ComicPalooza, Instagram at Houston ComicPalooza, and like us on Facebook. Don't miss ComicPalooza 2016 at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas, June 17th through June 19th. Get your passes today. Head over to www.comicpalooza.com for all the details.